and welcome to Hey, I Like, the podcast where we talk about all the things that make our little neurodivergent brains go bonkers. I am your host, Jess, and I am joined today by my lovely friend, Lucy. Would you like to tell us all what you will be talking about?
So, today we're going to be talking about 100 years of fashion, 1900s to 2000s. We're going to be covering some, you know, some key individuals, some key trends, some sort of decade-defining garments, generally just how fashion is changing over time. Focus is going to be in Britain, women's fashion specifically, some menswear, like the 30s, I think I have the notes on that, bit of makeup, little accessories, that kind of stuff when I feel like it, but that's going to be our main focus.
Fantastic.
So obviously fashion is really general and we could talk about it for ages. So let's go.
You were going to tell me about historical fashion stuff.
Right, yes. Well,
great segue.
Now we're okay. On to the 1900s, the turn of the century, and we're going to do a bit more of a little bit of a whistle-stop tour through the 20th century. So fasten your seatbelts. If you're listening to this in the car, safety first.
Definitely.
So that S shape that we're seeing coming into fashion in the 1890s is carrying on. This is very much the dominant silhouette of the decade. So you're pushing your bust forward, you've got your hips back, which is reducing pressure on the stomach because health is great.
Yep.
Emphasising this very narrow waist, and it's sort of referred to as kind of as a pigeon front. It's sort of very top heavy. And you can highlight this as sort of extra fabric, like blousy tops. And so, day dresses, because obviously you've still got that difference between day dress and evening wear.
Yeah.
Blousy high collar bodices, and then when you move to the evening gowns, it's more fitted bodices and low cut necks. But when you're going about your day to day business, modesty is key.
Of course.
Any skin from your neck to the floor, like to your wrists. They're not seeing anything.
Nobody is allowed to know that you have skin.
Oh no.
An ankle, how scandalous.
Oh, don't make me think about it. So lace is very popular in terms of beautiful embellishment trimmings, although if you can't afford lace, you can use Irish crochet, which is a cheaper alternative, because everyone deserves pretty clothes.
Yes, they do.
When it came to evening wears, your sort of desired look of the decade was very much this sort of mature, sophisticated, sort of graceful woman, which is very much what designers like Worth and... Oh no, it's into a French designer. I forgot this sort was in her.
Now you've got to figure out how to say the name.
And I would say, to be honest, the evening wear doesn't massively change.
Yeah.
Obviously you've got these new corsets, but on the whole there is a lot of similarities. So sports are, again, you know, they're influencing fashion, they're becoming a big influence. You've got designers like W. Velcro creating clothing, which is used for, you know, riding, golf, tennis, cycling, and you can also use them as daywear. It's a very, very nice jacket. I've always wanted to make one of these jackets. They're quite nice, flared, got some slits, very nice buttons.
You should do it.
I should. I should just drop out of school and make clothes. I shouldn't do that.
I mean, no, don't do that. But you should make the jacket.
When I have time.
So never.
That's another thing. Our style icon of this decade is Anna Rubisius. So she was very much encouraging women to dress individually, and she was encouraging the aesthetic dress, which was very different to the kind of silhouette of the time. It was a bit more loose, you had more earthy colours. It's very linked to that aesthetic movement we previously talked about. She was all about like themes like practicality, freedom of movement, Art Nouveau, as you know, again, we also talked about. And she published Woman's Own Dress in 1903, which was urging readers to sort of turn away from Paris fashions.
Ooh.
So here you can still see those kind of artistic movements that are influencing fashion, which I think is very cool. We love some pretty dresses.
We do indeed love some pretty dresses.
And that is the 1900s. I said it'd be quick. Now, the 1910s are an interesting decade because it's very much pre-war and war.
Yeah.
And fashion very much changes when, you know, there's a war on.
Yeah. Makes sense.
We haven't really got the money for nice clothes. So, in the beginning of the 1910s, this S shape is very soft into this F curve. So it's still relying on this top-heavy look, but skirts are kind of beginning to taper. Well, you know, it's less exaggerated, a little bit more natural. We're slowly getting to that very kind of flat look of the 1920s. Orientalism is also sort of influencing fashion. You've got these drape fabrics, these vibrant colours, a very sort of column-like silhouette. And it was popularised by Paul Poiret's sort of ballet Scheherazade. That's going to go for that.
Yeah, I think that is how you say it.
Yeah. So his wife Denise was his model and muse, which made her a fashion icon. We'd love to see it.
Yep.
And so his designs, they're very playful, they're very inventive. They very much sort of, they led to some of the key stars in the 1920s. And they're just very, like, he made some of these fancy dress costumes that were just so much fun. Although he had some interesting ideas. He made the hobble skirt. And it narrowed it so much at kind of like the ankles that it was difficult to walk in.
Oh yeah, I think I've seen this.
Which was a choice.
That was definitely a choice. See, I'm fussy with like skirts and dresses and stuff, and if it clings too much, I will not wear it. Because I like to be able to, you know, move freely without feeling like my legs are being squeezed. So
I think that skirt would kill me. I think I'd just trip. I would just put that on my face the entire time. And then, dun-dun-dun, World War One, chaos.
Oh no!
And this is, we're going to see a very similar pattern in the 1940s when, not to do, no spoilers, but there is World War Two.
Yeah.
But this sort of utilitarian clothing. So, a popular fashion would be like tunics worn over skirts, and women began to wear uniforms, you know, overalls and trousers, because they're supporting the war effort by working in, like, factories.
Yeah.
And fashion is very much becoming more simple. So, Doucet, as we, you know, we briefly mentioned him in the 1890s, he's producing some simple cotton designs because, you know, it is war. It can still look good.
Yeah.
But we're moving away from a lot of the extravagance of the early part of the century. An interesting note, as you kind of move, you know, 1900s, 1910s, there was like a pocket debate going on. There were pocket complaints. And do you know what they had to complain about in this time?
But I think I want to. They didn't have
enough pockets. Not the size. The size was fine. They didn't have
Still God.
Bottles of wine in your skirt, but I'm here like trying to fit my phone in my jeans and just pokes up the top like hello.
God, I can't remember the last time I could actually fit the things that I needed to fit in my pockets.
I know.
I mean, I can now because I went out and bought a waterproof coat, and it was a men's waterproof coat, so it had proper big pockets. But like, just like if I wasn't, that's my yard coat. So if I'm not going up the yard, like,
the thing with the disappearance of pockets is that I don't know. It's a strange thing. I mean, overall, like as you've sort of seen it from one end to the other, the silhouette's very much getting kind of like slimmer in just terms of how much fabric you're wearing. Which means that pockets are kind of harder to conceal. And because we don't wear apron front dancing more, which are skirts that are like in two bits. You tie in the back bit, you tie in the front
Yeah.
bit. So when you can't have like tie on pockets or anything, and no petticoats, when you don't have any petticoats to kind of smooth out the appearance of you, you know, having loads of stuff.
Yeah.
But it doesn't then explain why men's clothes still has pretty sizable pockets.
Yeah.
So. Ugh. Sometimes, you know, I mean, like, technological advancement's great, and, you know, we love having human rights, but sometimes I'd like, you know, I think I'd like to spend maybe a week in the 1900s just to get some of their pockets, like, just get a skirt of pockets.
Oh, yes. Go back to then and just buy, like, a skirt or something with the pockets. And then come back, you know. I have a skirt with really nice pockets, actually, but it was my grandma's, so...
All my skirts with nice pockets I have had to make, which I feel says a lot.
Yeah. I had to make a pocket for a dress that I had. Because there were no pockets and I wanted it to have pockets.
Just to shop. It sounds very materialistic, but I would just love to, like, just... Only thing is, you wouldn't be able to buy anything, you wouldn't have any, and it would be a correct currency. It would all be very... Well, not outdated, but not in date yet.
Yeah.
But, you know. I feel that would be a really good premise for, like a TV show about historical fashion, if it's, you've got, like a time traveller who's just, you know, going shopping.
Yeah. I'd watch that.
Anyway, on to the 1920s.
Yes.
So, World War I's ended. So women's fashion has become more practical because, you know, they have rights such as, like, the vote. And this new woman movement is taking on kind of a new life because they're wearing short skirts, they're wearing makeup, they're cutting their hair short, they're dancing until really late.
Yeah.
Unchaperoned.
The scandal.
And it becomes kind of... You very much see this in the 1950s. Well, after you've gone, you know, from these big skirts to this very more practical fashion, you don't really go back. You don't really go back. The World War One was very much a shift in just how many petticoats people were wearing.
Yeah.
We're also seeing the democratization of fashion.
Nice.
So it's simplifying the kind of desired style. There's a lot of inspiration taken from sort of typical working class attire, and the whole idea is that anyone can achieve the fashionable look, even if you're using a sort of cheaper fabric, so like jersey, artificial silk, and you're making it at home.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some designers. So a lot of these are French, because so Paris is still very much a massive influence on British fashion. Got Coco Chanel. So she very much contributed to this sort of androgynous style of a decade. She's wearing making trousers fashionable. We'd love to see it. And it's wearing sort of sportswear, as daywear became very much acceptable because, you know, sort of society was changing.
Yeah.
After the war. And it's no longer, don't show your ankles, you hussy. You know, you can show your ankles. Although, when it says short skirts, it's shorter skirts. I feel like I've got to make some things clear here.
Yeah.
Is that when I say skirts are getting shorter, I mean that in the mid-1920s, dresses are reaching the mid-calf.
Okay.
I mean, in 1927, they're barely covering the knees, but they are covering the knees. So it's shortest so far. For us, it's not, like, that short. But it's the shortest so far. Obviously, you can see there's a big difference between 1920s fashion and the dress from 20 years earlier. So, you have this androgynous look, which is fashionable. It's very much, it went from, like, very much exaggerating your waist to being, like, rectangle.
Yeah.
No boobs. just rectangle.
No shape, just rectangle.
No shape, just rectangle. So yeah, so you know, corsets, they're losing their boning, they're kind of getting elastic panels which all to flatten the silhouette. And like, to be fair, corsets are also serving as like garter belts, and it's
yeah,
a very much change in underwear. Although you still had like sort of more kind of feminine styles. You've got Lanvin. I'm gonna go Lanvin. Another French designer with sort of a, like, there's lots of like long full skirts, very sort of feminine, romantic, like kind of get that idea.
Yeah.
But you know, while you've got this going on, you've also got the flapper. Got a drop waist, got a creeping hemline. They're very easily created from economical fabrics, and sort of this simplicity in its construction was key. When it came to the, I have a few more notes on kind of more accessories, actually, in the 1920s. So when it came to makeup, it was like, because it used to, when I say like, she wears makeup, the new woman, I mean like, she wears like visible makeup. In the, like, yes. In the 1900s, 1910s, you would wear it, but it had to look invisible.
So, shocking, like, makeup. Like is, how people it, have to wear makeup to school still. Like, if you want to wear makeup to school, good luck to you.
Schools of makeup have very strange rules.
They do, yeah.
Because it's like you can wear invisible makeup. So what does that even mean? And then, oh, don't get me started on makeup in schools. It's so strange. It's very much centering on like blush, lipstick, eyebrows. That's the kind of things where it's all sort of, I wouldn't say exaggerating, just showing off. Part of the misconception that in the 1920s everyone's wearing like plastering on is it's the influence of like heavy stage makeup in Hollywood, so you can like actually see people's faces.
Yeah.
That's not massively like correlating to real life. Gloves. Long gloves are very uncommon. You might wear some short ones, but long gloves are very uncommon. Shoes haven't changed that much. They have sort of a, like a, though a chunky sort of curved heel, which is so it's apparently so comfortable, and it's so uncommon now. Where do we go wrong? Hats. So it's like the 1926 to 1927 is when like the cloche hats have got like a big boom. It's not an exaggeration to say kind of everyone was wearing them. You were not be able to walk down the street without seeing one of them. But before, you've sort of got wider brims are especially fashionable, and they just sort of stop showing the forehead. They're very low. And that's the 1920s. See, we're speeding through it now. We spent about half an hour on the 1890s. Now it's like, speed. 1930s. The bias cut. I love the bias cut. So this is sort of the main innovation.
Yeah.
That's being popularised by the courier Madeleine Vimnet. So this is sort of when the bias cut booms. The thing with cutting on the bias, so for those who are not maybe very textiles minded, we'll go there. So when you have your piece of fabric, you have the straight grain. So this is vertical or horizontal. So if you look really closely at your woven, this is for woven fabrics, and you can see the weave following, you know, one of those lines of thread, that's a straight grain. The bias cut, when you cut on a diagonal, this means that you've got sort of that natural stretch that comes with the fabric. And this means that the fabric is draping and moulding to the body really nicely. It is gorgeous. However, it's really expensive because you can't cut as many pieces on your fabric, because you're cutting it diagonally, you can't fit a line around it. So, you know, if you're wearing a bias cut gown, you're rich.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, it's used in day wear and evening gowns, but, you know, it's a little bit of a flex. This evening I was very much sort of being inspired by Greek goddesses as well, which I do find very cool. We've kind of gone this for very kind of slinky Hollywood style.
Yeah.
When it comes to daywear, your kind of typical day ensemble, it could be a dress, blouse and skirt, kind of like a matching blouse and skirt, kind of like a dress with like a little bolero. A little, a certain sort of garment that had a little bit of a spike in popularity, there you go, was the Bulgarian blouse. Quite different from other kind of styles of time. They're embroidered, they're made of sort of white cheesecloth. It was a brief trend, which, you know, again, is contrasting most of the blouses of the decade, which were highly colourful and wildly decorated. But I think they're really pretty. I do like them.
Yeah.
Hollywood is also a big influence in the 1930s. Because going to the cinema was very, very relatively cheap. Which, is the cinema cheap nowadays?
No. Yeah. It's not.
I mean, there's one near me that's like £4 a ticket, which is quite good.
What?
Yeah.
That's so good. Ours is like £11.
Oh, that's awful. No, it's this little cinema.
And that's with a student discount. Oh. Which I don't get anymore.
Oh. And then there's one... Well, there's one closer, but it's kind of bad, so...
Yeah.
I don't like going there. The door handles are always sticky.
Ew. The uni cinema used to do tickets for students for £3, but they were never, like, new releases. They were always, things that had come out a couple of months ago and they were, like, re-releasing.
To be fair, that would fit me.
Yeah.
I saw
the first Spider-Verse film like 3 times.
As you should. It was a masterpiece.
Yes, it was indeed. Anyway, cinemas in the whatever era we're up to now. 20s.
30s.
30s. Cinema in the 30s.
Yeah, we're going that fast now.
Oh.
So you see film stars such as Joan Crawford, which are they are becoming sort of fashion icons.
Yeah.
And people just wanted exact copies of what they were wearing. For example, so Joan Crawford wore this like floor length sort of white cotton organdy gown, had these big ruffle sleeves. And people wanted that.
Yeah.
Remember Joan Crawford, she becomes important in the 1940s as well. So you're seeing this very much the silver rise in, you know, sort of mass produced fabrics, like sort of artificial silk, so like it's bright on with such viscose. And these are becoming very popular in the house dress.
Yes.
And these are also influenced by the very much the rise of sort of fashion magazines, which are sort of promoting this consumption of ready to wear fashion. They're practical, so like printed fabrics are going to disguise stains, buttons are easy to get on. They're prioritizing practicality and comfort. Oh, you're still looking good.
Yep.
Practicality.
I can confirm that patterned fabrics do indeed hide stains, because I have several things in patterned fabrics and they are all stained. Can you tell? No. We're doing pretty well here.
So practicality in women's fashion is very much kind of the buzzword.
Yeah.
In the first half. And then...
I mean, as it should be, you know.
Because, you know, people are still going out. Still being fancy. As I said, you know, we've got the bias cut. We've got godets, which are a piece of fabric, which is like a triangular in the bottom of the skirt. And just creates it with extra flair. Furs, you had coats and stoles, and they were real fur, which I don't like. Real fur freaks me out a little bit, not gonna lie.
I mean, it used to freak me out a lot as well when I was younger, and then I realised that, like, things like leather and wool and stuff like that, that material still would have existed anyway. Yeah, like for leather especially, it's like, you know, the cow is already dead. So you might as well use all of it. Because otherwise it's just wasteful.
Yeah, no, you're right. So, also, I just feel it's just really hot. It's just really hot. That's just what I feel like. But anyway.
Yeah, I mean, we don't need it. So, we do not need all this fancy, like, fur and, like, the really heavy wool and stuff like that, because it does not get cold enough here anymore. But
climate change.
Back in the day, we probably would
winter
have...
was a proper winter.
Yeah. like, my granddad, my grandpa used to tell my dad stories about how when he was a kid in Copenhagen, the harbour would, like, completely freeze over. And they'd, like, go ice skating and stuff on the harbour. And, like, the sea between Copenhagen and Malmö in Sweden would freeze over and you could, like, skate all the way to Sweden. Which isn't very far, to be fair, but, like...
Think about that.
But, yeah, and, like, the river... The Thames used to freeze solid in winter. It's crazy.
Skate on rivers. Safely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, a little bit of men's fashion for in the 1930s.
Ooh, exciting.
Which is that I taught you about, and that actually wasn't amazing. It wasn't what I thought it was, but it had some information. So, interesting thing with evening wear for men is that the style is very similar across sort of classes, but how you sort of showed off your wealth in your class was through the fabric.
Yeah.
So, if you had a very nice like velvet jacket, that's you going, I'm posh. I've got a lot of money.
Yeah.
Makes sense. More for sort of more informal evening events. You might wear a smoking jacket. Could be padded, could be quilted. And that's where my interest in menswear finished. You get like one fact ever. I think I've got quite a lot for the 70s because it was related to one of my other subjects.
Yeah.
Oh, and heels got thinner in the 1930s. Heels got thinner.
Heels got thinner.
Heels.
As in, you were no longer wearing high heels constantly.
No, I mean, they're just less blocky.
Oh, okay.
Like the actual heel.
Yeah, oh, right, Okay.
We are speeding through these decades now. We are speeding through
these decades. We really are.
Because when I did this project... Because this was originally a school project where I have all the notes. It was make a timeline and then do one decade in detail.
You did the 1890s.
I did the 80s. I think everyone else did like the 70s or like the 30s or 50s. And I'm there like, corsets!
Yes.
I got a commendation for that. She was like, I like that you did something different. And that made me feel happy.
Good.
I wasn't even planning on originally doing the 1890s. I was like, I want to do like a completely different decade. And I didn't even like the 1890s before, but it just massively grew on me. Like, it's never been a decade that I thought much about, but now I'm like, absolutely love it. I do love that evening, or the evening was lovely. But back to the 40s. 50 years off. World War II. Here we go again. So, obviously, when you have a war, there's some rationing. There's a lot of rationing. There's food rationing. And there's also clothes rationing. There's fabric rationing, fabric shortages. Because, we're needing to use this fabric for uniforms. Which meant that...
Of course.
What fabric we do have, making clothes, becomes a lot more expensive. So accessories like gloves and hats becoming a lot less... popular because they're just increasingly unavailable. It's partially to do because of imports, and also it's just that certain factories that will be making these, and like materials are just needed for war supplies.
Yeah,
we can't really afford to just you as extravagant. Which means that, you know, skirts, they're now barely covering the knees.
Whoa.
This is all the modesty we can afford. And this leads to the Make Do Amend government campaign, which they like, yes, they show it like this, like these films in cinemas before the film would play. So you know how like now you go to a cinema and it's just like, it goes loads of really random ads and then trailers.
Yeah.
It used to be just government films.
Yeah, I can imagine.
They are actually very sweet, these Make Do Amend campaigns.
Yeah.
So they're all about encouraging the repairing clothes because as I said, if fabric needs elsewhere for uniforms, the war effort. But they didn't want clothing standards to slip because this could kind of be considered a sign of low morale. They wanted, you know, keep people happy, keep people looking fashionable, looking good.
Yeah, of course.
So they made these films. There's this one that I've seen and it's this family being like, we've run out of rations, what are we going to do? And all the older clothes come to life being like, I could be a pair of pyjamas. I make a very fashionable skirt. It's very easy to make do and mend. Why? Look in a local magazine or see if there's a make do and mend group near you. Because people originally, this was originally met with like lots of distaste. That sort of classes are popping up to help each other. You've got articles and magazines. They're trying to make this fun. It was a very kind of, a lot, you know, all the kind of advertising around it. It's all like clothes coming to life and fun buttons and that kind of thing. Which I feel is it's one of the nicer ways of keeping morale up, I think. Little, you know, upcycling.
Don't, yes,
ask me what my 1940s cinema campaign voice was. And so the war's also affecting, so we briefly touched on it in the 1910s, utility clothing. That's,
yeah,
you know, that's being brought back. So, you know, saving fabric. Basically everything about this is about saving fabric. It's still colourful. You know, you've got sort of smaller printer patterns that were easy to match. So you could, you know, cut pieces closer together. You would sort of, you know, you remove pocket flaps, you remove ruffles. Basically you're stripping down the design.
Yeah. Makes sense. All that fabric needs to go elsewhere.
Yeah. It's expensive, we've gotta cut things down. And yeah, there's a group of designers called sort of InSop, included sort of Banker Mosca. And they were producing collections for utility clothing. You know, the government were trying to make this seem desirable. So people actually wanted to wear these clothes, not being sort of felt like they were being forced to because they couldn't wear anything else.
Yeah.
Another wartime fashion is the siren suit. Which I feel when you say siren suit, I don't know about you, I always think of like a mythological siren. They're like air raid siren. So it was like a long sleeve hooded jumpsuit which was suitable for crawling in and out of air shelters.
Oh, nice.
I can't decide if I like them or not. I can't decide. I go from being like, that's kind of cool, to being like, I don't know if I'd wear that. But
yeah,
they do look very practical. So that's, you know, that's what's going on, sort of, you know, in Britain. In France. Because you see, previously, you know, what's going on in Paris is, because Paris is very much like a central kind of hub of fashion, is having lots of influence. But it's the war. And now there's this separation of British customers don't know what's really happening in France anymore. Because some of the fashion houses closed, but not all of them. And French designers, they were showing patriotism by using sort of extravagant amounts of fabric and, you know, full skirts. And this is what we see Christian Dior's new look. But it starts late 1940s, goes into the 1950s. Although I think people tend to sort of associate it with the 1950s, and it did technically start in 1947, so.
Yeah.
Do you have anything about the 40s? That is the 40s. That is 40s.
Yeah.
1950s. That is the 40s. we'll take a nice segue. A new look. So it's made famous by Christian Dior, and it's sort of got a tiny waist, a fitted bodice, and a full knee-length skirt. And it wasn't originally popular because V-neck was like a V-neck for kind of calf length, because people didn't want to go back to wearing long these long skirts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess if you got used to wearing short skirts, why would you go back to wearing long skirts?
Yeah, it actually caused outrage. But you have, well, it's the long skirts. The full skirts, they're celebrating the end of cloth rationing, which is a lot of restrictions. You very much see, ready-to-wear fashion is becoming massively popular. So there's like ready to sew kits that are making something accessible. It's utilizing these new synthetic fabrics. So just you've got your nylon, you've got all, and you've got cryptlene, which is extremely color fast. Color fast means that it holds dye really well. It's very absorbent. Yeah. For example, cotton is a natural fiber that's very color fast. Because it's because cotton fibers are hollow. We're going to go in a bit of a. This is just a bit just a little fabric. And okay, because they're cotton fibers. The structure of the fibre, it's hollow. So it can store water in it. Which I just, it's quite a cool fact. So block colours, they're mainly popular for tailored clothing. So, you'll be worn for work, for shopping. Stripes and other prints are remaining fashionable for your cotton summer dresses, your tops. Sometimes I feel we think of the past as very dull. But people have always been wearing prints. People have always been wearing prints.
So this is the thing, right? It's like going way, 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 way further back even than the 1890s. Like, people, you see it, it's because of film and TV, but people are just like, thinking about like medieval times or whatever, and they're like, oh, everyone lived in mud huts and they were all dirty because they didn't wash and they wore brown and black and white and beige and no other colours except for maybe
it's like
yellow or something, and it's like no
dye is relatively cheap. Some dyes are more expensive.
It depends on the dye. It's like the natural dyes that you made from plants you could make yourself. You could just go out into the woods and pick a load of plants and you had dye well done. And then the rich people would use the ones that were made of like precious stones and like earth minerals and stuff because they cost a lot more money. And maybe they did make brighter colours, but like you could get a long way on just plant dye that you'd collected yourself, Like they were not just walking around in leather and fur, And like, have you seen the Norse tablet weaving? Just thinking about the patterns and stuff, because that's insane. The amount of work they would have had to have put into that. And they were making like belts and stuff, like out of tablet weaving that had like all these intricate patterns and stuff on. And it's
gorgeous. Oh, I'm just
saying it's so pretty. And it's like, this is one of the ways that you can tell, women were very highly valued in those societies because they were the people who made all this stuff. You wouldn't have your nice clothes and your fancy tablet woven belts if you did not have women who could sit all day and be looked after by everybody while they went and did all of this stuff. So they were, the weaving and stuff was a very sort of highly valued skill, and if you could do that you were very sought after in your community because you were the one who was making the fabric for everybody, So I have feelings about people saying that medieval times and further back was just really dull, boring colours, and it's like, no, you lie.
I feel also when it comes to decades where you have film and photos but it's all in black and white, you forget that they're wearing bright colors. I mean, there is no excuse when there are paintings, even medieval paintings, and they're all wearing bright colors. It's very clear that people are wearing colors. The past is bright, and it doesn't, it doesn't all come out of nowhere. Got a lot of feelings about this, but there is beauty in every decade.
Yes, there is.
And it did not start with the popularisation of the colour TV.
Yeah. I keep seeing little video clips and stuff of video footage or like series of photos that they've made into like videos and stuff from different periods in history that they've like recolored because they were in black and white because they're from like the 1910s and stuff. And it's like, whoa. Yeah, like the colors are still a little bit washed out because they haven't quite managed to get the like recoloring quite back to what it would have been. But it's just like, whoa, that's cool. Yeah.
It makes people, you know, that footage from the past seem so much more like real people.
Yeah.
I find. And it's just, I think human history is so sort of, it's so strange to think about how there were people, you know, wearing the same colours and enjoying the same thing as, you know, 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're still wearing fun prints and they wore fun prints and we like pretty clothes and they wore pretty clothes and it's...
Human connection across time. We have not human changed. Human connection across
time. Something always stays the same.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's a woman who's expecting a baby or something is always going to sit and knit a like blanket for that baby. All eras of history, parents and family and whatever have made clothes or blankets or something for the children and used that as a way of like welcoming them into the world. And I love that. That's like, that sounds like some sort of religious ritual, you know, but it's not, it's just people wanting to give something. Oh, humans make me feel things.
It's when you see toys made for children that are from like hundreds of years ago, centuries, almost thousands of years. And they look exactly the same, pretty much. You know, it's a little duck you can roll around on wheels.
Yeah. I love it. I love it so much.
So, I guess back to fashion.
Back to fashion.
Back to fashion. We've got Givenchy's interpretation of the little black dress.
Yeah.
It's less stuffy, it's less padded, less structured. He would eventually go on to dress Audrey Hepburn in the 1960s. So, not everything, you know, was big skirts. We also did have, you know, quite sleek things. Fluffy petticoats weren't really worn regularly. They're not like Edwardian petticoats. They're still warm, they're not like Edwardian petticoats, but, you know, they're because they're more like plain, A-line narrow skirts. You don't have the space for that.
Yeah.
It's different in high fashion. That's also a mistake some people sometimes make when they're thinking about clothes. They think about like, what's in magazines at the time, not what regular everyday people are wearing.
Yeah.
But actually, now I mention magazines, it's a really interesting thing. But it changes, I feel, it, like especially like now. And you'll see it more kind of 60s onwards. In the 1950s, kind of before, fashion's very much being directed towards adults. Like, younger people have like specific styles, like a young person style.
Yes.
So, you know, they had the entire 50s, you kind of want your heady saddle shoes, so like a button-up blouse, like a third skirt. Young people's fashion, that's in air quotes, it didn't dictate fashion trends, like I feel it does now a bit more.
Yeah. Because I did history GCSE just like you did, and we had coursework, which you don't anymore, and ours was all on the 1960s in the UK. So we learned a lot about like youth culture and all of that. And the 1960s were, from my memory, the first time that teenagers were like a specific group that was separate from both adults and children. And the 50s, you sort of start to get that sort of separation starts to happen. They start to get their own sort of culture, their own sort of fashions and stuff. But it weren't really considered entirely separate until the 60s. So, yeah, this is my input for today's episode. I know stuff.
You do know. So you know lots of stuff.
None of it's useful.
How much stuff, you know?
None of it is useful.
So we're going sort of minimal accessories. So, you know, not always like a... You wouldn't wear your full sort of like your hat, gloves, your scarf. You might wear like one or two. You know, you might wear like some gloves and a scarf kind of thing.
Yeah.
High heels were not very high.
Good.
4 inches, I think, was like a high heel, even for stilettos. Yeah, so sort of for everyday looks, you sort of walk in heels. You know, flats were best. Lipsticks, a lot of peach and pink. Pink lipstick. Bright pastel sort of eyeshadow. Oh, something I forgot to mention in the 1940s.
Fair enough. Oh, no.
Pencil skirt become popular. So that's popularised by Joan Crawford. That's why I said she'd be important later.
Pencil skirts
very much fall out of fashion in the 50s because obviously we've got this sort of big A-line skirts are coming more in fashion. But because, and this I think is what I'm going to talk about, cyclic fashion. The thing with fashion trends is that they go around in circles. It's kind of like a little wave. And every sort of 20, 30 years, they rewrite themselves. And as you're going to see with pencil skirts, so remember, 1940s, but it's gone out of fashion now, but it's going to pop up again in the 1980s. And they go fashion again, then it popped up in kind of like the 2000s. And I mean, we see even with today, you know, like, we went from skinny jeans to wide leg jeans, and in like a few years, we'll probably go back to skinny jeans again. But not for me.
Yeah. I like skinny jeans.
I don't like skinny jeans.
I do.
I can't get skinny jeans on.
I don't like the like really loose baggy jeans, but that's because I don't like the feeling of denim. And if you get the looser jeans, you like it's going to be denim. Yeah.
Which I do. Yeah, I find cyclic fashion very interesting because it's sort of like nothing's new. It's just in a different font.
Yeah.
And that is the 1950s. We have reached our halfway point. You know, go get yourself a snack.
Yes.
We would have an ad break.
Please
if we
do.
Had any sponsors? If you want to sponsor us, we have an email. Pay me to talk about fashion. I know I'm doing it for free, but you could pay me anyways. we could give Jess some compensation for all the editing slaves over.
Oh my god, the editing.
Editing. I say it was the halfway point. Well, actually technically at 1960, which is like slightly over, but it's like the halfway point of my page, so.
Yeah.
The 1960. The miniskirt.
The miniskirt.
Do you want to know why skirt length shortened? Take a guess.
Well, it's not going to be lack of fabric this time.
It is the invention of the contraceptive pill.
Makes total sense.
You can show off that skin. Show off sex. You won't get pregnant.
Yeah, that is true.
Me if you are, I can sort it out. Popularized by Mary Quant, who was a British fashion designer in 1964.
Yeah.
She is a very interesting lady. So, in 1963, she establishes the Ginger Group to sell mass-produced clothes directly to people on the high street. They're very famous for, like, pinafores and jumpers combination. And there was a lot of mix-and-match ensembles. I do love a mix-and-match ensemble.
Yeah.
Made cosmetics. She figureheaded the jersey dress boom. And she popularised sort of an informal androgynous style, as well as being very influential in mod fashion. So mod fashion was all about sort of a slim silhouette, clean cut and smart. In women's wear, it was like about high waist sort of side dart for a kind of a boyish look. And you had bright colours and geometric patterns inspired by children's books. In men's wear, who had the mod suit. This is what we actually mentioned in men's wear in some detail, because I did a round bit of research on this kind of thing. So, you had sort of narrow trousers that were kind of tapered towards the ankle, but you didn't have a break kind of in the shoe.
Yeah.
Like the sort of small lapels. The small lapels were kind of a little bit of a leftover influence from fabric shortage, which is quite interesting, I think. You sort of got these echoes. Yeah, so it was all about this very kind of very clean cut, which is massively contrasted in the 70s. But you also had flower power.
Yes.
Reaching its height in 1967. Welcome to the hippie movement. So it's all about, you know, this very free and flowy style, natural materials, like, you know, tie-dye, sort of. Lots of, you know, embroidery, that kind of thing. Very infamous, sort of young radicals, your knee boots.
Yeah.
And starts late 60s into early 70s. These techniques are kind of including, you know, crochet, knitting, I say embroidery, smocking, dyeing, patchwork, quilting. I can never decide if I like hippie fashion or not. I can never decide. I go from being like, that's actually quite cool, to that's horrendously ugly. And almost in the opposite of that, so you had the space race going on, you know, as part of the Cold War. And therefore, you know, you've got space age fashion, which is sort of revolving around exploration. So, André Courage was a French designer, and he was the first to use plastic and PVC in his designs. So, for example, like, go-go boots became sort of a staple. They were, like, fluorescent, shiny sequins. And he used very restricted colour palette, sort of with monochrome pastels. And so you very much had these almost two opposing movements going on. You have very futuristic, you know, it's like silver, shiny, new, with, you know, your kind of, your natural dyes, your flowing materials. Which is also what I found very interesting. Our good friend the pencil skirt, still not massively in fashion, because you got this very bloated bohemian look, same in the 70s. But don't worry. Cyclic fashion is coming.
Yes.
And that is the 60s.
And that is the 60s.
1970s.
Whoop.
The rap dress.
We are getting there.
This is kind of reflecting. The websites I was looking at say woman's sexual freedom, and I don't know why that sounds very strange to me. No? Okay, wait. I'm starting the 1970s again. My brain broke a little bit.
Okay.
1970s. The wrap dress. So, Belgian / American designer Herman Fastenberg created the famous 1970s design. And the wrap dress looks good on so many people. It's such a great dress. I love a wrap dress. And it's great because it allows you to sort of transition from professional day wear to fun evening wear by, you know, using accessories, dressing it up, dressing it down. Additionally, sort of menswear inspiring women's wear, which I think you see a lot throughout history. It's becoming sort of more acceptable to wear this kind of clothes both as formal and work wear. So you have like trouser suits, like Yves Saint Laurent, becoming less form-fitting, feminine. And they also make glamorous by using animal prints. I've seen some truly horrendous trouser suits. But they do look, they are very nice cut. They are very nice sort of style. I'm just not into cheetah print.
Yeah. Fair enough.
As
I'm not
said,
either.
You know, the hippie movement is continuing. It's making its way into high fashion through sort of Sandra Rhoades' evening gown designs, which means this sort of like flowy silhouette. And the 70s is also referred to as the polyester decade. Because new synthetic fabrics like polyester and nylon are making fashion affordable and accessible. Although, you know, satin sequins are a must for clubbing. So as the decade's progressing, you know, short mini dresses and hot pants are becoming longer, swine dresses and skirts. Yeah, half necks are also popular. And you're going to see this definitely come into the 80s when we're talking about disco. When it came to men, yeah, the 60s and 70s are when I actually had like a vague actually understanding of menswear. So in the early 70s, it's all about this very sort of tall, lean silhouette. So you would emphasize you had sort of like more narrow trousers, you had turtlenecks and mock necks, and then this in the later 70s becomes those wide trousers, becomes those flares. And the fun thing about flares is a lot of them are very easily homemade, because, you know, you would take your sort of your narrow trousers from the 60s, cut them up at the sides, add a bit of fabric, bam, you got some really cool flares. 1980s, we are speeding through these last few decades. We might actually get this done in our recording session. I think we're going to start with some disco, because we've already mentioned it. Your disco attire, it could include leotards. It would always include sequins or metallic jumpsuits, short loose, made of disco dress, made of a disco shirt with a sort of satin silk getting that shine. It's just all about just fun. And, yeah, just fun, shine, sequins. You want like, the disco lights to be reflecting off your outfit. You also have, and then on the completely different end of the spectrum, you have power dressing, which is being inspired by Princess Diana. So you have, like, shoulder pads, you have suit dresses. They are becoming essential for women in the workplace. And this is when our good friend the pencil skirt becomes popular again. It's all about sort of looking both masculine and feminine. In contrast, also, men are in plum places wearing a lot more sort of feminine styles, which I think was quite cool to see the hair switch. No, your pals have just got a of wide lapels, tight trousers, or a pencil skirt. Each trouser you should pleats. And another. This is when we get on to the 80s and 90s. I think I just have more, just more names easier to pronounce. So, Jane Fonda is the first major star to do an exercise video. And this is important because she is essential on the keeping fit movement. So, scientific advancements are making, you know, illnesses more easily diagnosed. And also people are realising, like, the negative effects of smoking. It can't detain this long. And this just led to an absolute obsession with fitness fashion. So it was, like, Lycra, leg warmers. It's the kind of fashion that you'll be researching it to print out some pictures, and someone just goes behind you and goes, "What are you looking at?" Because it's all these women in, like, their leg warmers and the Lycra in these very, like, slightly strange positions, because they're all, like, screenshots from exercise videos. Another big style icon was Madonna. So you have, you know, your fishnet gloves, your scrunchies, your bangles, your tutus, you know, your leather, your beaded necklaces, the conical bras and sort of the underwears, outerwears, all about sort of female sexuality. Looking good for you, Madonna is definitely a style icon. Thing in the 80s is that you very much see this increase in slogans. So Catherine Hamlet is the first designer to use slogans on t-shirts, and she was using them to convey political messages and to encourage people, you know, to use their voices. So she would speak out against, you know, the HIV, AIDS crisis, like, you know, war, missiles, the state of the fashion industry. And this is a lot, very much you see is how politics are influencing fashion.
Yeah.
And I think it's really cool, you know, you see slogans a lot on t-shirts these days. And this is kind of where it started with her. I'm pretty sure she's still alive. She's still making, you know, political t-shirts. She is still alive and kicking. That is from 1980s. I think we got through that in 5 minutes.
We did indeed. It was not very long at all.
1990s. I don't like the 1990s.
You said.
I'm perfectly honest. It's not my thing. I mean, I'm a fan of flannel, but, like, I don't get excited about it. Grunge, which is inspired by the US movement in Seattle that started in about the late 80s, and that was, you know, across the pond. It's based on everyday clothing, sort of usually secondhand. And you've got, you know, you've got sort of baggy walnut jeans, Doc Martens, flannel, and you also had the sportswear trend, which continuing from the late 80s. Oversized jumpers and biker shorts, leggings, kids. Princess Diana remains a fashion icon. And then environmentalism is also a big sort of issue in fashion, a big something that's influencing it, because, you know, people are becoming kind of more aware of the impact. And there's, you know, these rising issues like the ozone layer. Although we fixed that, actually, didn't we? We fixed the ozone layer.
We did fix the ozone layer.
Round of applause for us. Only we could fix everything.
Round of applause.
So these collections were all about sort of without using harsh chemical dyes, sorts of earth tones, luxury natural fibres like cashmere, and lower impact fibres like hemp and linen. I love linen. Linen is a great fibre. We should use more linen. Only thing with linen is so creased. Everything you wear in linen is going to crease by the end of the day. I've got a linen shirt, but because I'm always like rolling up my sleeves and unrolling them, it's the most creased like lower half of the sleeve. We have the slip dress, which is embodying the kind of the feminine minimalistic style of the mid-90s. Versace was a prominent designer of slip dress. It's sort of like lots of lace top and bottom, very slinky. And another designer that's becoming very well known, more kind of mid to late 90s, is McQueen. So his famous collection in 1996 is Dante, and it featured denim, 18th century inspired corsets, eye masks with a PK Jesus. The show was in a candlelit church. There were just skeletons in the audience, which is like, way to, yeah, such a vibe. Imagine doing that in like the 1900s. 100 years changes fashion loads. And that brings us to the year 2000. And I don't...
Hooray.
Please let me stop that episode, but a few sort of, I guess, in the 2000, in the 21st century, this is where we really see the rise of fast fashion. And so decades don't have that kind of less of those quintessential styles because fashion changes so fast. I mean, you still see, like, you know, you have, you know, your skinny jeans and more kind of early 2000s, and then that comes into wider jeans now. But fashion changes so quickly because of fast fashion and those technological advancements that, you know, makes it possible. Like, it used to be, you know, something that was in a shop would stay in a shop for, you know, a good few months. And now it's like a good few days, almost. And fast fashion is, you know, well, it's destroying our planet, to be perfectly honest. However, it's also cheap and affordable. So it's a very tricky problem to solve in the fashion industry. And I don't know what the solution is, to be honest. I don't know what the solution is. But that got depressing quite quickly. I think it's so interesting just to see how you can go in 100 years from, you know, barely showing your hands to, like, biker shorts.
Yeah.
But I think it's so interesting the kind of things that can affect fashion. But obviously you have fabric shortages, but the way people kind of get around that and change it, and that government campaigns, is just really interesting, you know, and the contraceptive pill and the space race and the polyester. Fashion is an ever-changing kind of, like, it's just an ever-changing kind of beast, almost.
Yeah. You can't win anymore.
You can't win.
With fashion stuff.
Yeah, we can't beat fast fashion at the moment. But I think we can very much celebrate how fashion has changed. And we should still celebrate, you know, fashion today. I found it interesting to see sort of where it all kind of comes from. Also, I think it would be... I could imagine if you rocked up in the 1900s in leggings. You'd start the wet chance again. So that is 110 years of fashion history.
Nice.
I'm not really sure how to end that off on.
I don't know either. It's your episode. You have to do it.
Oh no.
Okay, no. The fast fashion thing. It's like, yeah, it's depressing, but also people are aware of it now, and I think we're seeing quite a big rise in people sort of not fighting back against it, but yeah, like, I know I've seen or like met or spoken to quite a lot of people who are like, oh yeah, I hate fast fashion, that's why, like you, I make my own clothes, or I started knitting or crocheting or sewing, yeah, or something. Like, a lot of people are like,
crochet craze is all it's yeah, yeah. I mean, as well as
yeah, it's like it's people are getting so fed up with fast fashion and just having to bin things after 6 months that they're like, you know what? I'm going to just make my own, and it's going to be better quality and probably cheaper. So.
And like charity shops. I love a charity shop.
Oh, yes. Love a good charity shop bargain.
I'm currently wearing something I got from a charity shop. I usually am. But yeah, I think the thing with fashion and fashion history is that you kind of see that we have the power to change our clothes, to decide what we think is fashionable, to decide what we want our fashion to do with us. Like, people wanted practical clothes, so fashion evolved to be practical. People wanted to celebrate the end of rationing, so fashion evolved to be extravagant.
Yeah.
Fashion is not independent of us. Fashion is human. Fashion is what we make it. Thank you for listening. I expect I'll be back to talk about some Victorian fashions. I expect this may be a little bit of a series if I have time to research. And we'll just kind of end up going further and further back in a kind of wibbly wobbly, timey wimey thing. I hope you have a wonderful 2024. If you are not already, I hope you know. Things pick up. Bye.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening. If you've made it all the way to the end, congrats. You're officially much stronger than half of our friends. If you're enjoying listening to this podcast, please subscribe so you get notified when we update, or sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/hey_i_like. We have a direct line to us, the creators. You can also follow us on Tumblr at heyilike, which is all lowercase. That's all for now. See you next time on Hey, I Like.